My name is Sarah House. I'm 16 and I'm interviewing my Nana, Tana Gann Goforth. We're in Lacey, Washington. This is for the Thanksgiving listen. Well, it's a little late. Okay, Nana. So, can you tell me about your grandparents? What were they like?
My grandparents. So, I never met my mom's dad because he died both like when my mom was like 18 or 19 or something, well before I was born. He died, he was in World War One and he had exposure to mustard gas.
Okay.
Which is kind of the World War One equivalent of Agent Orange.
Yeah.
Right? And he was an alcoholic, and so he passed away. I never met him. My mother's mom, Grandma Hempstead. So, to me, she always looked old. Always seemed old, and always looked the same. Like, it didn't seem like she aged that much, but I knew her for 35 or 40 years, so it's kind of funny. She was always very quiet. She didn't seem to laugh a whole lot. I think that life was just really hard for her.
Okay.
And because her husband died so young.
Oh.
And
yeah.
She may have had some flirtations with other guys. I don't know. Nobody ever really. I think my mom said once, I think maybe she's seeing the gentleman that lives upstairs. But she never hinted about it or told us about it or anything. But she made a point of taking each of her grandkids to do something.
Okay.
At least once or twice, something special. And so she took me on the train over to Kashmir to the apples and chocolate factory.
Oh, that'd be fun.
And that was really fun. And then when I was older,
mm-hmm.
I would go over. She lived in Everett, with same town. And I would go over sometimes and have dinner with her and visit and stuff. So I saw her pretty frequently. She was at her church. She was known as the cookie lady because she always made cookies and brought them to the kids at church. She died of leukemia.
Okay.
And she was, I don't know, like 82 or something like that. I can't remember exactly how old now. And my dad's parents, my dad was born in Texas.
Yeah, so then they lived in Texas, right?
And they lived in Texas. And I was born in Texas, and so I saw them a lot when I was little, but because family moved up to Washington when I was like 4, then we made some trips down there, but, I didn't really see them a whole lot. Grandpa was like 10 or 12 years older than Grandma.
Okay.
And I asked him how they met. I asked Grandma how they met, and she said it was at a Christmas tree party in their little town they lived in. And she said she knew he was too old for her, but he was the one. And he was a... What I remember most about him was he was a trickster. He was a jokester, and he loved doing the funny tricks that people do, like making the end of their thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Look at, you know, a kid making it look like they take the end of their thumb off, and he would do this thing where he would wrap this string around your neck, or he thought he did, and then he would pull the ends, and it would be straight in front of you, and it was like... He just pulled that string through my neck. How come my neck's not falling off? And so he would do all those mm-hmm. kinds of funny things and laugh. and laugh and laugh. He just thought it was hilarious. And one time, Grandma told me this story. One time, he had gone into the market or something, driven into the market, and she came back and she was pulling into the driveway. And this was actually, they were older when they did this, because Aunt Joyce was the youngest one, and she was like 13 or 14, I think she said, when they did it. Anyway, so she pulls into the driveway, and Grandpa's laying in the driveway, right?
Yeah.
Just laying in the driveway. And she stops the car and jumps out and goes running and hollering his name, which was Smith. And she hears him behind the house laughing his ass off. Because what he did was he took some boots and jeans and a shirt and everything and like made a scarecrow, stuffed his clothes and laid him out in the driveway.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that's the kind of guy he was. On the other hand, my daddy told me that he was very much the if he lost his temper, run.
Oh.
Run. If the boys did something bad, they would hear the belt whipping out of the belt loop, and they were going to get beat with the belt. So he's very hard disciplinarian kind of person anyway. Mm. But, of course, I never saw that side of him.
True.
and Grandma was very tolerant, very quiet person, and very sweet. She sewed. She never owned a washer and dryer, ever. She always washed her clothes by hand. And she made quilts by hand.
She hand sewed the quilt?
She hand sewed every stitch of the quilt, all the patches together, all the quilting, the whole thing. She hand stitched the quilt. And I imagine she made the kids' clothes and stuff too. Never really heard about that. But one of the things that I just like makes my eyes pop open is she would sit and eat jalapeno peppers out of the jar like we might eat little pickles or olives or something. It's like, holy crud. Oh my goodness. But my most precious memory is Daddy got a phone call from one of his siblings, I'm not sure who. They'd taken Grandma to the doctor, and because she had some sores that weren't healing on her leg, well, she had advanced breast cancer. And so word went out, if you want to see her, you better get here, like now. So I went down, and I made a point. She was in they put her in a care facility because they needed somebody that could care for it. It was actually an open wound.
Oh.
Yes, it was awful. And they had to have people care for these wounds, and nobody in the family could do it. So I made a point of going over there by myself and sitting and talking to her. And that's when she told me the story about how they met. And
the scarecrow.
And the scarecrow laying in the driveway. So, but they were important people when I was, not that I don't really have any really distinct memories of them from when I was little, but they were very important people for my life when I was little, living down there. So,
cool.
There are some stories about your great-grandparents.
I like it. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? Like, what were you like as a child?
Oh, was I like as a child?
Yeah.
Oh, Lordy. That's a really good question, because, like, I think that I was one of the quieter ones in school. It's like, I was really excited about going to school, but it was kind of scary for me. And part of the reason is just because I was so little. I was like, even in high school, there was one person that was shorter than me. And she was like 4'10". But I kind of feel like I was withdrawn and kind of in my own little world. That I remember kindergarten, there was a park right down the street, and I loved to go up and play in the park. And there was a little boy that lived like across the street and three houses down, and I would go get Gordy, and we would go to the park and play. I feel like I'm very introverted, but very, very really wanted to learn. Oh, here's the good one. Library. So my mom's philosophy was that if you teach your kids how to get to the library and how to use the library and get them a library card, then you have access to all the knowledge in the world. You can learn about anything you want to learn about. You can read whatever kind of stories you want to read. Right? So, because there wasn't any internet, right?
Makes sense to me.
So, I don't remember doing this before we moved to Everett, but in Everett, we would go to the library, and we could always check out a certain number of books. I don't know how many it was. And she, you know, taught us how to approach a librarian for help and all of those things. And when I found out that I could get my own library card as soon as I knew how to write my name, well, I was four, five, something. I was like four and a half because it had to be before kindergarten. And I practiced writing my name on the wall in the closet. And my mom tells the story, because I don't remember saying this, but my mom tells the story of, like, this is a setup. Don't ever do this to your kids. Who wrote all over the wall? Well, it was my name. Who the heck did you think wrote all over the wall? But I said, David. Uncle David, right? My older brother. Well, obviously not. But she thought that was funnier than heck that I would accuse
your brother,
my brother, of writing my name all over the wall in the closet.
He's just keeping a tally of how many times you annoy him.
Yes, apparently. So then, let's see. I was very curious about things and really wanted to learn how to read. And I started reading books really young. Mickey Mouse Club was a new thing, right? And my mom didn't really want to have a TV. Mm-hmm. Grandma Hempstead bought a TV for the family. And so getting to watch Mickey Mouse Club was a huge deal for me. But most of the time, I didn't turn the TV on. I used the TV screen because, you know, they were big, bulky things, right? I used the TV screen for a mirror to dance in front of. I loved to dance. I actually got to have dancing lessons for a while. You know, like ballet lessons. But that wasn't really my favorite thing. Because I was also always felt very clumsy and uncoordinated.
Yeah. And then you could do square dancing.
Oh, yes. My daddy was a square dance caller.
Yeah.
And the big square dance club that he was in, there was a whole bunch of couples that had teenage kids. Well, the only teen square dance club in the area was in Seattle. And, of course, driving to Seattle wasn't the same as driving to Everett, Seattle now.
Yeah.
My brother could drive, but, he couldn't drive then yet. One of the parents had to drive the kids into Seattle, mm-hmm. which is why they got together and they created a teen square dance club in Everett. My dad was a caller. And I started square dancing when I was, 11. 11 or 12 or something. No, I was, 11. No, I was 12. Because Grandma and Grandpa Clark.
Oh, and that's when you met Grandpa Stan.
Brought all of their kids. So, Stan.
Yeah.
And Uncle Mike and Aunt Pat and Aunt Kay. Linda wasn't old enough yet.
Yeah, she's like a baby.
She's the baby. She's a couple years older than Shelly, than your Aunt Shelly. And so I knew the Clarks because I would go to the square dance lessons and play with Michelle. No, the adult teen club, the adult club.
Yeah.
When Daddy was calling, and I would go with him lots and play with Michelle and. Everybody would talk to me because I was so cute or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so I knew, I kind of knew who Grandma and Grandpa Clark were.
Yeah.
But then they brought all their kids. And I saw Grandpa Stan. And I'm like, I swear, I picked him out when I was 12. Gonna marry that man. Well, he's 4 years older than me, for heaven's sakes. I mean, he's like 16 and I'm 12. Come on. But he and Uncle David
mm-hmm. they were
got
friends.
To be really good friends, and they were always running around, and probably if we knew all the things they were up to, we'd just have a heart attack and wonder how they lived.
Yeah.
But
that's with any teenage boy.
Grandpa Stan went into the Marine Corps, David was here behind him. He was still in high school. But he would go over to Grandpa and Grandpa Clark's sometimes and visit with them because he'd hung out there so much.
Yeah.
And then when Grandpa Stan was on leave, he would come over to our house and check and see how things were going and check in and say hi because he'd been in and out so much. Mm-hmm. And the year I turned 16, he came home on leave. And noticed me. And that was between tours in Vietnam. And he went back to Vietnam. And now we're writing letters to each other. And he asked me to marry him in a letter.
How romantic.
How romantic is that? But he wrote great letters. He wrote the greatest story. He wrote a story to me.
Aww.
And I wish I would have saved all of those, but of course he really made me mad and I threw them all away.
Well.
And I wish I would have saved them all. Anyway, so square dancing was like all kids should have something that's the save your life activity.
Yeah.
That you get really involved with and keeps you out of trouble. So square dancing was that for me. And the other thing that I did was I started playing violin in the fourth grade.
Yeah.
And I played violin all through high school, but I never owned a violin. So when we moved from Everett, where the Everett School District supplied
instruments
for kids that couldn't afford them, and we moved up to Sultan that had no orchestra. So then I had no violin, so then I didn't play anymore. Which is kind of sad, because I really liked it. But I never learned to read music.
I played the saxophone for 3 years, and no idea how to read music. Absolutely none.
No idea
how
to read music.
If you put a saxophone, book of music, I'd be like, good, I don't know what that is.
I don't know. I'm here. What's it supposed to sound like?
Yeah. Play it for me. I can play it for
I
you.
I can make it sound like that.
Thing. Yeah.
And I was like second chair. And never learned how to read music. So I was always like right up second, third, fourth chair right in there. Never learned to read music. I mean, I could tell you if it was an A, B, C, whatever, and it's sharp or flat or whatever, but that picture on the paper did not interpret into put your fingers here, and it's supposed to sound like this. I just, it made sense. Okay, so that's enough.
Okay, tell me your favorite memory of me.
Oh, my. Really? You know what? I bet it's Disneyland. When we went down to Disneyland when
you
were five.
When I was five.
And we did the princess
breakfast
together.
I still remember that.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun. We did the princess breakfast together and you got to have your picture taken with a bunch of different princesses and have your book signed.
Mm-hmm. I think I filled up like two or three
I filled up a couple of autograph books. It's just favorite memories of you. It's just like, which one? Because I think, for me, with you and Andrew, it kind of crosses the line between mom and grandma.
Yeah.
Because we've spent so much time together
mm-hmm.
that there's so much.
Yeah.
That, and how do you pick out? So I can tell you there's things like when your bedroom's always a disaster. Your bedroom's always a disaster. Your bedroom's always a disaster. And some switch flipped. All of a sudden, your bedroom's not a disaster. I'm like,
what happened?
Done. And, whoa, this is really cool. Look what all the cool things you're doing and you've done, and you switch things up. And it's like, wow. You know what I did today? I was talking to your mom. I almost called you Dawn. I'm like, you know, I didn't used to mix them up. The boys, Andrew and Russ, and...
I mean, they all look the same. So.
Well, you know, those ones I've all, like, you know, which one are you? And I told your mom, you know, it's because you've gotten big, like you're her size. It's like, all right, who am I really thinking about now? But, so, yeah, so now I'm, like, going off. But going to the movies together?
That's always fun.
And, you know, we've done that a few times, and we were going to do it a lot, and we haven't, but, you know, we go do things together.
Yeah, we do.
And going and doing things together, I'm just running errands, and you're like, okay, well, I'll come help you. Or, yeah, that sounds fun. I feel really privileged that we can do that, where we like each other. And
step one,
we really like each other. We're not just hanging out together because we're related. And, you know, being able to just like, okay, let's go to the store. Let's go clothes shopping. And, okay. So here's one of my most favorite.
Okay.
Partly because it just kind of cracks me up.
Okay.
Our first summer solstice together.
Mm-hmm.
So you're all of what?
Two? Like one and
a
half?
One and a half. right? And for the sake of the recording, it's a big women's gathering. They do a garage sale thing to help raise funds to help people attend who can't afford it. So I'm poking around at the garage sale, and I find a little ceramic tea set. And I'm like, all right, I love tea sets. I had a little tea set when I was a kid, and I loved it. I wonder if Sarah would like a little tea set. Well, it's a garage sale. It's going to cost me all of a buck or something, right? So I'm going to buy this little tea set. It's all there. And I take it back to camp, and I set it down, and you say, let's have a tea party. Of course, it's in little kid words, but clearly you said,
let's have a tea party.
And your mom looks at me, and I looked at her, and I'm like, well, clearly she knows what it is. And Dawn's like, how does she even know about tea parties? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know where she might have gotten that from. Because I loved having tea parties when I was a kid. I'd have tea parties with my teddy bears and my dolls. And my mom would make real tea for the teapot.
Ooh.
And I got little crackers. And we'd cut up little pieces of cheese. I mean, my mom was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll set you up with a tea party. And sugar in the sugar bowl and milk in the creamer.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's real tea parties when I was a kid. So, yeah, it's just like osmosis. I don't know. But it skipped your mom because she wanted pink pickup trucks.
Yeah.
You know, she went into tea parties. But
I still have that tea set.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm. It's in the garage.
Well, there you go. What's left of it, huh?
Well, you know.
Well, yeah, but, you know, pieces break or disappear. But
yeah.
There you go. So, really, like, that's, like, one of my very most favorite. Because that's the start of your mother looking at you like, where did that come from?
Like and the 12 going, pillows.
What?
The 12 pillows.
The 12 pillows on the bed and the belt loops.
Yep.
Tearing the belt loops on your pants because your pointy pants are flying your belt loops. And me going, how do you, oh, shoot. Yeah, I do that. And fingernails.
Mm.
Getting our fingernails done and it's makeup.
Yeah.
Just, although your mom does makeup, but, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we want all the makeup.
Okay. Can you tell me about a teacher or other adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up?
I have two teachers that really stick out in my mind. One of them was my kindergarten teacher, and she was just a very, very nice person and dealt with the troublemaking kids and the problems, everything. She dealt with them all in a very wonderful, gentle way. I never saw her as, like, scary,
mm-hmm.
but she was definitely in charge. But she was engaged and she got married in the spring of the year that I was
mm-hmm.
in her class, and she invited the whole class to her wedding. And I got to go to her wedding. And I just we actually had a party for her.
Oh, that's cool.
The class had a party. I don't know if obviously some mom's brilliant idea or the other teachers or something. I don't know. And I got to go, and I didn't even know what kind of present I took. My mom came up with something.
Yeah.
And her including all of us in that event, She treated us like real people. And I think that really had a big impact on me understanding that just because they're little, you know, they're real people there. That's a person, and that person's feelings can be hurt, and little things can really make a big difference in that little person's life. And because that was so thrilling to me that we actually got to go to her. That was the first wedding I ever went to that I remember. So that just was fabulous. And then in high school, I was taking the secretarial kinds of classes, shorthand and adding machines. We had adding machines. There were big, bulky, with typewriter keys and big handles you pull down. And, manual typewriters. And I remember, I think I was a junior, when we got half of the manual typewriters replaced with IBM's electrics, and electric typewriters. Anyway, Mrs. Larson was her name, and that I had her for several of those kinds of classes. And I was in class one day, and I can't even remember what the heck class it was. And we were working on whatever it was. It was probably typing, because she was walking up and down the aisles looking at whatever it was we were working on. And she walked past me. Now, this was back when we had to wear dresses or skirts to school. We couldn't wear pants to school. And all the women teachers also had to wear dresses and skirts and stuff. And back then, we wore slips under our dresses and skirts. And sometimes those slips decided to slip down some. And so then your lacy bottom part of your slip would be hanging down. And she walked past me, and I don't know how I caught her attention. But she came back, and I kind of did this, you know, come really close, and I said, "Your slip is showing." She's like, "Oh, thank you." So she kind of fixes her. And then, when we were all finished with whatever that assignment was, or our time was up for it or whatever, she's like, "I want to share something with you, and I hope you don't mind." So as I was walking around, Tana stopped me, and she told me my slip was showing. Don't be embarrassed about that. But what I want you to know is, if you notice somebody, their slip is showing, sometimes nylon stockings still have a seam up the back, their seam is crooked, or they have a run in their hose, or, you know, their makeup's smeared or something, a green in their teeth. Can't remember exactly the example she gave, but she says, if you notice, be kind and tell them, so that 2 hours later, they don't realize 2 hours later and wonder how long they've been walking around with their slip showing or the green in their teeth or whatever. She said that was absolutely the right thing for her to do, and I really appreciate that she would do that. So that's where I was like, all right. Because for me, I don't know about other people, but for me, it kind of takes a lot of courage to bring to somebody's attention that they've got black under their eye because their mascara smeared, or, you know, there's something, you know, running around with toilet paper hanging out the back of their pants or whatever, you know. But I would much rather, personally, somebody tell me than I figure out myself and wonder how long people have been laughing behind my back because I'm walking around with toilet paper hanging out my back.
Yeah.
Pocket or something, you know. Whatever. Anyway.
Okay.
So those are two teachers that really I have several, but those are the two that really stand out. Both of them were very kind souls.
What advice would you give to your teenage self?
Run. Just run. No. I think no matter who you are, being a teenager is hard. There's so much going on. There's so many changes in your life. But, here is what I would tell my teenage self. Don't start smoking. Forget it. Don't do it. Quit right now. Walk away. I know you don't want to, but believe me, right now, it would be easy for you. It's never going to be easy again. So just don't. I think that's really...
That's good
advice. I mean, that's, yes.
Okay, what are you most grateful for?
What am I most grateful for?
Mm-hmm.
Can I look at you and cry? Because really, my family and my family of choice. There is no thing that I'm most grateful for. I'm certainly, I'm grateful that I've always had some kind of roof over my head. I've always had food to eat of some kind or another. I've always, there's all of those things that people can be grateful for. But really, my family and my friends, and those friends that we call family now,
mm-hmm.
because I know that if I really need help with something, if I reach out and put the word out, somebody's going to show up
mm-hmm.
and help me through or figure it out. And truly, I think that it doesn't matter how much or how little money you have, or how much or how little stuff you have, what makes life worth living is the people, the relationships you have with the people around you. And I got some pretty kick-ass family and relationships with them, so there you go.
How has your life been different than how you would have imagined it when you were young?
Oh, holy crap. I think that the biggest thing is, so I'm a baby boomer, and after the end of World War II, mostly now, the men would work and the women stayed home and were housewives, unless they really, really, really wanted to. Have a job somewhere. Some women did, and they worked outside the home, and that wasn't horribly uncommon, but it was much more common for the mom to stay home and do the housekeeping and the grocery shopping and PTA and all of that sort of thing. And so growing up through school, in high school, we were certainly encouraged to have trained for some kind of job, but the girls, it was all like nursing or secretarial, that kind of thing. And it was kind of with it even the families that encouraged their girls to go to college, going to college was to meet somebody to marry as much as any kind of career. I mean, it just wasn't rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us, most of the women my age, grew up expecting to maybe work for a while until you met the right guy,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd get married, and you might keep working until you had kids, but then you were a mom and a housewife, and you stayed home, and you took care of all those things, and somebody else went out and earned all the money, and it was somebody else's job to check your oil and change your tires and paint the house and fix the plumbing, and, you know, that just was kind of the expectation. And so, and that's what your grandpa Stan, actually. I mean, that's, I kind of was going stir crazy at home, and I needed to do something, but he was like, no, he didn't want me to go to PTA, and he didn't want me to do this, and he didn't want me to do that. And it's like the only excuse for not being in the house was if I had a job. So I went and got a job. Screw it. I intentionally picked school bus driving so I'd have the summers off with my kids and the vacations and everything, right? Anyway, I didn't expect that I would be working to take care of myself, that it was going to be up to me to work to keep a roof over my head. And that was so different, just incredibly different. Did that actually answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because sometimes I get talking and I forget what the question was.
What are your hopes for me and someday for my children?
Oh, Lordy. Well, first of all, I hope that I see you with children. That I actually am here long enough to be a great grandma and be able to rock the babies. And, you know, life is not for wimps. Like I said, it doesn't matter how much money you have. Money doesn't buy happiness. Things don't buy happiness. Happiness comes from within. And life's going to throw you some shitball ringers. Just like, really? I mean, you've already got some of them. Hello? Celiac disease? Really? How special is that? Thank you. You know, and all of the medical stuff that you got going on. You know, read the question to me again.
What are your hopes for me and someday for my children?
Yes. I hope that you manage to carry on with the best of our family. I think our family kicks ass wonderfully. And all the good parts keep on rolling downhill, because I think that, like, you, what you just did for Autumn tonight, running to McDonald's and taking her food and her charger, it's like that kind of spreading joy around and mm-hmm. taking care of each other and encouraging the best and laughing. And when I'm laughing, you and Todd are just such a crack up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just, I hope there's not shit that comes your way that breaks you. Because shit's going to come your way.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But not so bad that it breaks you, and that that sparkle and joy that shows up in the awesomeness, like your brother going out and what mountain's he on today? Because, yeah, he's climbing another one. That's what I want.
Well, thank you for letting me interview you. I love you.